First time Serena Kashirin.
At this time, I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Caroline R. She's from the Baltimore area.
Well, my name is Caroline, and I am a grateful recovering addict.
Hi,
family. First, I want to thank the God of my understanding for allowing me to be here. And I want to thank my predecessor for believing in me and calling me and asking me to do this workshop. I am nervous. It seems like it's a lot of eyeballs looking at me. And I feel like a little girl. You know, emotionally I am a little girl, still trying to grow up. Wow. The topic is breath of life. When I got the topic, I was like, wow, breath of life. What in the world am I going to share on the breath of life? And see, in this program, we share our experience, strengths, and hopes. So I was like, oh my goodness, what in the world am I going to share on breath of life? You know, and I looked up breath. I looked up the synonyms that meant the same as breath. And it said, exhale, inhale. Then I looked up life. And it said, zest, liveliness, growth, excitement. And I remember before I got this topic, I was talking to a friend of mine, and I told him, I said, you know what? I said, I'm starting to feel alive. And he said, what do you mean alive? I said, I'm just feeling like, I said, once upon a time I used to feel dead. And he said, dead? He said, dead and alive is you die. And I said, no. I said, when I was a kid, I felt dead. When I picked up crack, I felt alive. He didn't understand what I meant though. And he was like, don't you share that in the meeting. And I said, in the program they said you have to be honest. I said, they say share your experience, strengths, and hopes. And see, as a little girl, right, as a kid, I really, really was in a whole lot of bondage and in pain. And when I picked up crack, right, it seemed like I had came alive. See, I had came out of this box. I had came out of isolation because I couldn't talk, right? And I came out and I could talk and I could stand up for myself and I had this courage. Y'all talked about that it was false courage, but I liked it. They called me the happy crackhead. Because see, where I came from, you know, where I came from, I went to school and everybody laughed at me. Where I came from, I wasn't accepted. I wasn't liked. I lived in a lot of fear. I didn't know what was going on, but I knew that I didn't even like myself. Because I had the inability to be open and I had the inability, I couldn't even talk. But once I picked up crack, it didn't matter what Pookie Boo Boo or Nene said. Because I could take a stand. Once I picked up crack, I could speak up for myself. Once I picked up crack, I was open. Once I picked up crack, it seemed like people even liked me better even when I was smoking crack than when I wasn't smoking crack. A crackhead was the first person that believed in me. He told me, he said, you know what, you're so smart. that you can have your own business. Today I have my own business, y'all. That's because a crackhead told me that. He was on crack and God was working through him, using him. See, God can use anybody. Sometimes you can be in a situation, in a hopeless situation, not even realize you're in a hopeless situation. See, I was in a situation and I was smoking crack, but guess what? I had a whole lot of hope though. Because see, I believed that God was going to rescue me. See, one time I had got locked up for the umpteenth time, right? And I was sitting in the cell, right? And I looked at this girl and I asked her, how old was she? And she said, 26 years old. And I asked this other lady, how old was she? And she said, she was like 40-something. I was 30-something. I was like 31. And I had a defining moment, a moment of clarity. And I said, if I don't stop and get off of this train, then I'm going to be right back in here like the 40-something-year-old. So when I got out of that jail cell, I went back to the people that I was getting high with that believed in me. They had believed in me because they called me the queen. They called me the teacher. That's the first time anybody ever called me anything good, because I was called dirty, ugly, and pissy. That's what I was called. Crackheads was calling me the queen. Because God was using them to show me something that was inside of me. And they was calling me the teacher. Teacher? This one guy is calling me the general. General? I am a general in God's army though. He was calling me like, look, he was calling me that. When I left out of that jail cell, right, I said, dang, boy, how in the world, what am I going to do? I want to get off this train. But I had crack in one hand and my dreams was in another hand, and I was at a crossroads and I had to make a decision. How do you make a decision when your phone hadn't wore off? See, every hit I spoke, I went to the moon. I liked crack. The euphoria hadn't wore off. So I'm at a crossroad. I got my dreams in one hand because, see, up to that point, I didn't have anything. I ain't had no job. I ain't had no kids. I ain't had no husband. I ain't had no house. No bank account. No checking. No savings. No car. No, I didn't even have a driver's license. Because, see, at that point, men was taking care of me. And I didn't mind. Because, see, little boys used to beat me up in school, but big boys started taking care of me when I was a crackhead. And I didn't mind. So now I got crack in one hand, my dreams in another hand, because I wanted those things. I wanted to have a job. I wanted to have a car. I wanted a driver's license. I wanted a checking and a savings account. So what do you do when your euphoria hadn't wore off? What do you do? I called on a power greater than myself in the crack house. And the people that was calling me the queen, the general, they started saying, what is wrong with you? Why is you calling on God while we in here doing this? I said, I need God to rescue me. Every time I picked up the pipe, I said, y'all know what? They were saying, what? I would say, God gonna deliver me from this. I ain't know no other word to say. Deliver ain't nothing crazy. Well, it's just that God was gonna rescue me because I was stuck like Chuck. One of my predecessors said, stuck like a mouse on a sticky pad. That was me. And I was still having fun. So now I believe in a power. Look, it didn't matter. They laughed at me when I was saying God was going to come and rescue me. They was laughing, but guess what though? It didn't matter whether they laughed at that time. It did not matter because, see, crack gave me that courage that I had never had. Never had no courage. So now I'm believing, and I'm telling them like God gonna show up, and He gonna rescue me, and He gonna remove the desire. I didn't know anything about obsession and compulsion, but I knew that God. I said God is gonna remove the desire from me to smoke crack. I didn't know what else to do. One day I went over to a friend of mine's house, and this girl that I used to get high with, she came from Philadelphia, and she came in the house, and look, at that time, I still looked kind of good and everything, and she came in, she was like, "Dad, Caroline, you still looking good." And I was like, and I know. But she went in her pocketbook, right, and she pulled something out that I wanted. She pulled out a checkbook, and she committed to writing a check to somebody. And I was like, golly, you know, she had something that I wanted. So when I went back to the crack table, I said, "Y'all know what?" They say, "What?" I said, "God gonna rescue me, and guess what? I'm moving to Philly." And they say, "When you gonna move? Once you move tonight." And I said, "He ain't rescued me yet." Your phone still had war, and God hadn't shown up yet. But guess what, though? I was believing that He would. See, that's faith. I had faith while I was in the crack house that God was going to show up and remove the obsession and compulsion, and I was going to move to Philadelphia. I said that for about 6 months. God showed up. I ended up moving to Philadelphia. He moved the obsession and compulsion. I moved to Philadelphia and stayed for 10 years. God is awesome. I came to the program of Narcotics Anonymous, right? I sat up front, right? And the little girl that I was, I skipped through the door. I was a little girl. I was 5 years old. I didn't know I was 5 years old. Now the crack is gone, and now the courage is gone. I sat up front, and I was like, "Oh, my God." Because, see, you know, the people was like, "Hey, Caroline, how you doing?" I was like, "Oh, my God." Because I used to watch a lot of television, because the television used to give me a vision of what I wanted my life to be like. So I was saying, television was my first addiction when I was a little girl, because I wanted to escape. I went into a fantasy and lived inside the TV, and it gave me a vision of what I wanted in my life. And I liked the Brady Bunch. I didn't care whether they was white, because I wasn't prejudiced. I wanted to be in their family because they seemed like a family that had some structure. It didn't matter to me. So now I'm in the meeting, right? I'm sitting up front, and I'm like a little girl. I just got off the merry-go-round, and I'm sitting up front. And then, the people was like, "Hey, Caroline, how you doing?" And then that show came to my head, because I always, in my heart, I watched this show, and it say, "Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name." Not only do they know my name, but they're glad that I came. And I was like, "Oh, my God, everybody know my name, and they glad I came, and I'm so excited." I'm like, "Woohoo!" until I opened my mouth. I raised my hand in the meeting, and I got some courage. I raised my hand, and I said, "Y'all know what? I always wanted my father in my life." Somebody said, "Shut the F up. Talk about you. It ain't about your father. Talk about you. We want to know how to get high. We ask you." The little girl that I was didn't know that they were trying to really help me, but I ran back into the closet, and I closed the door, and I locked the door. Because they sounded like my mother. They sounded like my father. So now I'm back in the closet again, and I'm hiding. But see, sometimes in the program of Narcotics Anonymous, you'll say things because God will lay on your heart what you need to talk about. And sometimes if you're still a people pleaser instead of a God pleaser, you'll try to please the crowd. And see, I was the type that I don't want to please the crowd. I'd rather run. See, I was a runner because, see, I ran from home. I ran from school. I ran from NA. I ran from AA. I was a runner, like Forrest Gump. Run, Caroline, run! All my life I ran. Only time I didn't run is when I was smoking crack. Then I didn't care what Pookie Boo Boo or Nene said. But now, the crack is gone, and here comes the little scared Caroline again, worrying about what Pookie Boo Boo or Day Day gonna say. I had no courage. The topic is breath of life. Wow. I had an issue. I want to fast forward because I don't want to take up too much time over there, because I want to get to the part where I lost my breath and it came to life. Oh, my goodness. I had an issue, a man's issue. When my flavor came, I was like, ooh, ooh, ooh. I was locked and loaded. I was like a little kid when my flavor showed up. See, I had boxed with God for years not to come back to the program of Narcotics Anonymous. I had surrendered to God, but I hadn't surrendered to the program because fear kept me in bondage, because the seed of fear was planted when I was a little girl. The enemy had a hit out on me when I was in my mother's womb, because my mother told me she tried to kill me. She didn't try to kill me. The enemy tried to kill me, but he just used her to do it. But God said, no, I have a plan and a purpose for your life. So now I'm locked and loaded. Lord, finally 2009, I had 6 years clean, finally surrendered and said, God, I'm going to go back to N.A. 2009, as soon as I came back to N.A., here come the man. The show began. My flavor showed up. I'm locked and loaded. Obsession and compulsion showed up. I'm chasing the man like I'm chasing a piece of ready rock. I'm like, what in the world is going on? I don't know about nobody else, but when obsession and compulsion show up, it's time for me to get in conscious contact with God. Because see, God has all the answers for me. And sometimes you won't hear the solution to your problem in a room. Sometimes you just won't hear it. So I had to get in conscious contact with God. I said, God, what is going on? Why am I chasing this man like he's a piece of ready rock? I don't like obsession and compulsion because it takes over me.
Come on, man.
But I couldn't hear what God was trying to say to me because my mind was confused. But I kept hearing something say, something about got something to do with your father, my father. What in the world could it have to do with my father? And see, at nighttime, I could pray real good, right, because everything is quiet, and I could get really, really, really in tune with God, and I could hear from God. So at night, I went to pray, and I said, God, what is going on? He took me back to a little girl. A little girl. In a fetal position, I was in my bed, and I couldn't breathe. And I was crying out, and I said, oh, Daddy, please don't leave me. The next morning, look, I was on my first step. That's fourth step stuff. But God know where you need to be at because he know what you can handle. He told me to go in the meeting and talk about my father. I said, in the meeting and talk about my father. Mind you, in 1998, he told me to talk about my father, but I didn't have the courage to do it. Because I still wanted to be accepted by people. Instead of being a God pleaser, I wanted to be people pleaser. So now I got the courage, right? I got a little more courage because I had grown up just a little bit. I called my sponsor. I said, God told me to go to meet and talk about my father. She said, well, Caroline, you need to do what God said do. I went in the meeting. I sat up front. A big knot came from the pit of my stomach, and it was sitting right here, and I couldn't breathe. I couldn't breathe, y'all. And I was like, and I said, I always wanted my father in my life, and I was in a fetal position in the meeting. You could stay, you could go all the way down outside, and you could hear the me crying, the pain. And after I finished crying, it felt like I had took off 50 pounds, and I felt like I had new life. I had a spiritual awakening, seemed like it, and I felt energized. And I felt like I had took a hit of crack, but it wasn't crack. I had got a taste of some freedom. And all my life, all I ever wanted was to be free. I had a lot of hope, but I didn't have no freedom. And I didn't know how to get freedom. I had to tap into a power greater than myself and ask him how to get freedom. He said, Caroline, if you want to be free, you got to do what I say do to get free.
Come on now.
I said, God, I'm willing. I surrender. I didn't know what I was doing. Only thing I was doing was following orders. Because sometimes when you want something so bad, God will give you an assignment. He would say, Caroline, you got to do it my way. not your way. Because sometimes I want to pick and choose what I want to work on. God said, no. He said, no. So now it wasn't over. We can see. It wasn't over. I was hoping that it would be just that one time cry. I was hoping that it would just be that one time and then, whew, it's over with. I'm free and it's over. No, 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 no. God said, talk about your father. A couple weeks went by, I sat up in a meeting, he said, talk about your father. The pot got stirred. Either you want to serve it up or you want to put the lid back on it. Once it gets stirred, and every time that pot got stirred, and every time I tried to serve it up, I would get choked up and I couldn't breathe. That was a defining moment. Caroline, which one are you going to do? Are you going to choose life or death? I choose life. So I talked about my father, and I talked about what I wanted from my father that I did not get. I wanted, always wanted to be daddy's little girl. All my life I wanted to be daddy's little girl. I wanted my father to hold me. I wanted him to hold my hand. And I was like, dang, you know what? He ain't had to buy me nothing. Nothing. Today, I still would love to be daddy's little girl. Would love to be. December 25th, 2011. Christmas Day. I get in my car to go on the east side to go over a friend of mine's house. God is in control, not me. Because I made a decision in the third step to turn my will and my life over to him and tell him to do what it is he wants to do with me. I get in my car. I end up on the old block that I used to live on when I was 12. I stopped. I looked at the house. I didn't feel anything. Drove down a little bit more. Parked my car. It's almost like God was guiding me. Parked my car in front of the elementary school that I used to go to. Remember, all the kids called me dirty, ugly, and pissy. I was sitting in my car, and I looked over across the parking lot of the school, the playground, and I saw myself as a little girl standing there. In that moment, all this pain started rushing up. Here we go again. The pot is stirred, Caroline. Either you're going to serve it up or you're going to put the lid back on it. I sat in that car and cried like the little girl that I was. You talk about freedom. That was the best Christmas present I could have ever gotten. Because after I finished crying, it felt like I had took off 50 pounds. I felt life again. I felt like I could breathe, and I went on my way and had a wonderful Christmas. Wonderful Christmas. 6 months ago, my mother called me. She said, I had a dream. And I said, about what? She said, me and you were in a really big argument. Mind you, I never argued with my mother. I would run. I was a runner. I ain't argue with my mother, because see, where I come from, you don't argue with your mama. Not your mama. That's your mama, girl. She wants you in this world. You don't argue with your mama. So I was like, well, what I was saying? She was like, I don't remember. I knew she remembered. 2 weeks later, I had a dream. In the dream, me and my mother was in a really big argument. But in the dream, I was having an out-of-body experience. I was looking at myself, and I was a little girl. And in the dream, I went to tell my mother, I said, oh my God, I hate. And when I said hate, I watched myself stuff it, and I went into a rage, and I started banging on this truck, and I was hollering. I was like, ah! And I woke up. And I was like, oh my goodness, I hate my mother. And hate bothered me. My mind wasn't even trying. My mind was trying to go back into denial. It didn't want to even conceive the word hate, because hate sounded like a real bad word to me. But look, I grabbed my daggone dictionary and looked up the word hate. It said a strong dislike. I said, thank you, God. I would rather take a strong dislike than the word hate. And then I called my mother and I said, dang, I had the same dream. My mother was like, thank you, God. Thank God it was only a dream. God was revealing to me that I hated my mother. The little girl that lived inside of me hated her mother. And know what? You can't change nothing you don't acknowledge. The truth will set you free. But first, it will make you cry. Then it will make you angry. But eventually, it will set you free.
Come on now.
What God showed me is that I needed to grieve the relationship that the little girl didn't get with her mama and the little girl didn't get with her daddy. So I had to go on a grieving thing. Because see, at first, I thought that you just say, oh, I forgive my parents. I forgive them, you know. Forgiveness ain't that cut and dry. I had to find that out through prayer and meditation. See, it starts with denial. See, when I was a little girl, I put the denial blanket on because I couldn't stand the pain of what was going on in my household. So I went into denial. Then, it goes into bargaining. And bargaining, I would buy my mama. I would say, mama, if I buy you this, will you love me? If I buy you this, daddy, if I buy you a watch, give you a card, give you a picture, put it in your mailbox, will you love me? Mama, if I buy you all these clothes, will you love me? That was bargaining. I had to move into anger and move into sadness. I straddled with the anger because in my household, the only person who could get angry was my parents. I wasn't allowed to get angry. So I stuffed all the anger on the inside. And the two things I had, I'm going to fast forward this real, real quick. When God showed me that I had unresolved anger towards my mother and unresolved hurt. Look, I started calling people on the phone and said, how do you get rid of anger? Somebody said, shoot a gun. Somebody said, break some glass. Somebody said, journal. Somebody said, scream in a pillow. You know what I said? I said, Dad, you know what? God showed me that I had it in me, so God's going to show me how to get rid of it. Two fears I had. I didn't want to get angry at my mama. I didn't want to get angry at a meeting. So now I got two fears. I went to my mother's house to take her to the flea market. Right, went to the flea market. She bought a microwave. I brought it, sat it down, went and got my car, brought it over there. My mother get in the car, and first thing she said is, why'd you sit that microwave there? The anger came up like a volcano. I was trying my best to put the lid on it. I was trying to push it down. I felt like that little girl when I was really a little girl. That's what I felt like. I was trying to shake it off. But it was, look, sometimes the pot gets stirred when you can't put the lid back on it. It's like a volcano. Just my mother said one thing and it shut out. And I was like, God, please just don't let me tell my mother I hate her. I don't want to say that. Guess what? God is an awesome God. He's awesome. Because me and my mother, we were arguing. We was going back and forth and back and forth. And it's the first time I ever argued with my mother. But God had already revealed it to both of us. But I never said I hated her. Until she got out my car, I pulled off, I banged on the stove, I went into a rage. I thought, I hate her. All that stuff from childhood pushed all the way down. I went straight to a meeting. Remember, two fears. I didn't want the anger to come out towards my mother, and I didn't want the anger to come out into a meeting. Got into the meeting, the lady, first the person she called, well, nobody don't usually call her. She was like, I want you to share. Tell me God wasn't working. God was working. Because see, I had already calmed down and put my face back on, you know. I'm like, oh, Lord have mercy. What in the world happened? Oh, my goodness. Oh, the whoop. I felt bad. I was like, whoo. Look at this. Oh, Lord. I was like, thank you. You know, because see, the little girl always want to stay in hiding. She don't want to show up. She don't want to get vulnerable. She want to stay in hiding because she's so fearful. She's so fearful, but I had to take the mask off and let the little girl show herself right up in the meeting. And I was in a fetal position. I cried and I talked and I talked and I needed to talk. See, grief is different than mourning. Grief, you can grieve for 30, 40, 50 years. I had to transfer the grief into mourning because mourning is external. Grief is internal. The mourning, I had to talk. I had to feel, deal, and heal. I love recovery. I can embrace my feelings today, and I'm going to watch God turn that hatred into love, unconditional love. I'm going to watch him do it. I know he's doing it. I love recovery. I love the program of Narcotics Anonymous. I love God more, though. This program was designed to get me closer to God. Them steps. Take the steps. Please don't sit on the steps. Don't skip the steps. Don't go under the steps. Take the steps one step at a time. Thanks for allowing me to share.